Good morning. I'm going to call the local government committee to order. And first on the list would be the approval of minutes. Representative McDonald, have you had a chance to read them?
As a matter of fact, I did, and I find them to be correct.
Sounds
okay. But no errors.
Okay. All those, do you want to make a motion to approve?
Make a motion to approve the minutes as written.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes stand approved. We're going to take House File 703 first, and we did do it last time, so we'll have limited testimony today. Today it's just to take questions, and then we'll take the vote. So while I go to the front, would Representative Elkins take the microphone?
Chair Mason, would you like to introduce your bill?
Yes, thank you. We're going to be talking about House File 703, and basically, it's removing the salary cap that has been in place. And the reason for doing so is it's making it really difficult for a lot of our local governments to hire, the best talent. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask, we'll start maybe with... I'll have my testifiers do a quick review, and then we'll take questions and answers after that. Mr. Carlson.
Oh, Madam Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm reminded that you haven't actually moved the bill yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'd like to move House File 703.
Okay, there we go.
And it would be going to, do we have this going to GovOps?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. Thank you again for hearing this bill. And as I testified 2 weeks ago on this bill, the league strongly supports the repeal of the salary cap. This has created many wrinkles in local government ability to attract and retain individuals to work in our communities. I think we highlighted last time for you a situation faced by the city of Rochester that recently had some longtime employees retire, and in filling those vacancies they ran into some challenges because neighboring states have salaries that are significantly higher than what Minnesota can offer. I think that testimony from Rochester was included in your packet before. I have also handed out today a letter from the city of Lakeville. They had hoped to be here again today to testify, but unfortunately had a conflict, so Mr. Hellyer decided to submit a letter for your reference. So with that, I would just be available to answer any questions, but I would turn it over to Mr. Sulem.
Members of the committee, I'm Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. And I thank you for the time to hear this bill. This bill actually became one of our association's top priorities for the year. I believe Mr. Carnival spoke at the last hearing. But when you're dealing with municipal utilities, you're looking at people with very specific skill sets. It's a much more limited market than on a regular position. And it, as Mr. Carlson said, it's just very difficult to be competitive when you have a cap. And when you apply for a waiver, in some communities, you're applying for a waiver in conjunction with your fellow city manager or county administrator, and then if one gets in, the other doesn't, it makes it very awkward, and there's inconsistencies that are having to be dealt with. So we definitely very strongly support this, support the local control. This is not something that's going to be used wildly. I don't think there's any city out there that's just looking to raise everybody's income significantly. It's strictly a matter of when you have those high-level administrative positions that are highly skilled, we need the flexibility to make it work. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, and I'd also like to thank Representative Mason for introducing this bill. We are in support of this bill. You have two letters in your packet from my member counties of Olmsted and Scott County telling them about the issues that they're facing in attracting and retaining their top leadership and some of the professional positions. This has been an issue that has been growing. We now have over 110 entities or requests for waivers from the current cap, and while we've been grateful for the accommodation that the Dayton administration has provided for those waivers, it hasn't always worked. As was testified at the last meeting, the waivers that were provided in the most recent round allowed Rochester to raise the caps for their city manager and utilities directors, but at the same time, the county that contains the city of Rochester, more than three times the budget, four times the staffing, was not allowed a waiver for the request that they made on behalf of their county administrator and their three deputies. So the existing system is just proving to be more and more problematic, and as Mr. Carlson indicated, we're not competitive with adjacent states. So I appreciate your support of this bill.
Great. Just an observation that in my time on the Bloomington City Council back in the 2000s, it first manifested itself just in terms of city manager, city administrator salaries, but by now it's affecting, I think, especially probably public works directors and chief information officers for cities and counties as well. So, members, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. See, I meant to ask this question to the Carlsons, Mr. Carlson. That didn't sound right. Anyway, we visited yesterday in my office, and I thought of a question to ask after you left. As you know, I was in a bit of a hurry with other duties, but I see that in last year MMB approved 22 of these, and the average was about $29,000 increase per person. In your expertise, if this does become law, how much of an increase do you see these positions increasing per year? Do you see it a spike in 1 year right to the taxpayers of each city, or kind of a gradual step increase as usually is the case when you look at salaries for employees?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, I want to make it clear that the range adjustments that were allowed by the Department of Management and Budget's actions were adjustments in the range. They were not adjustments in the pay for the particular incumbent in those positions. In almost all instances that I know of with our counties, although some have received adjustments in those ranges, their incumbents have not immediately gone up to that. They are subject to the normal evaluation that occurs year by year in their performance, and their salaries are adjusted accordingly within those ranges. So I'll just, by way of further answering the question, the school districts were exempted from this cap back in 2005. There has not been a wholesale increase in school superintendent salaries. Right now, from data that I have had available, about 32 of the superintendents are making receiving compensation in excess of the current cap applicable to cities and counties. So by no means is it a wholesale increase in salaries as a result.
And Mr. Chair, if I could also just jump in. Because the waiver process is not a sure thing, a lot of cities and counties we know come in with a higher number knowing that they would phase in up to that new salary range over a period of years, because it's very cumbersome to come in with MMB and not know if your waiver request would be fulfilled. So as Mr. Carlson indicated, most of the times these are adjustments in ranges, not immediate salary increases. So I would agree from the city perspective.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I think that's good to know. And would you agree that it's fair to say that most residents in cities and counties really weren't aware of the cap, the average person weren't aware of this cap in the first place in the state statute? So would you recognize that for the most part? And then the second part, knowing now that we're going to lift that cap, and you gentlemen, I shared with you my views on this, the pros and cons and how I could support it or not. In viewing this, do you think most citizens, taxpayers, would approve of this in your polling and expertise within the League of Minnesota Cities and Counties? You have a better pulse on it than I do.
Mr. Chair, I'll start with that one. You know, on the first point, I think Mr. Carlson and I found, as we talked with legislators over the last year, there were many legislators that were not aware that we had a cap on local governments as well. So I would agree with you that probably most citizens do not know that. Let me just say that on that point, we have some extraordinary things that we at local government have to do with the pay and compensation for our highly compensated individuals. Number one is there's a state requirement, and I don't have the statutory site right here in front of me. It's in Chapter 471 that says for any city or county over 15,000 people, you must annually notify your citizens either on your website, in a newsletter, or in, I think, in your truth and taxation statement of what the salaries are for your highest three paid individuals. So we have a transparency and a disclosure requirement in Chapter 471 that already does apply for cities over 15,000. And I would venture to say that not many cities under 15,000 or counties under 15,000 would even be approaching the current salary cap. So, and I should also say that the compensation decisions are done in a public hearing. So when you make decisions on the compensation for your highly paid individuals, that is done in a public forum, and that information is public information as well. So somebody could request, any citizen could request information on those salaries. So there is a lot of transparency things behind this. But I think most citizens don't know about this issue because most cities and counties are not anywhere near the cap. We're talking about a growing issue, one that we're trying to get ahead of here by repealing this law. But I think most communities do not are not anywhere near the cap at this current point. Keith, do you want to add anything?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, I would concur with the answer that Mr. Gary Carlson gave you. I'd also point out, well, the cap applies to our employers. It does not apply to our contractors. So to the extent that a city may contract for legal services, their city attorney, or for engineering, there's no cap on those contracts and may in fact result in compensation greater to that individual or firm than these current caps. So, again, I agree that our citizens are widely ignorant of the fact that there is a statutory cap on the salaries.
I would agree that based on my experience as well. Representative McDonald?
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you. And I agree with you. And for some of those contracts, of course, our city engineers, our city planners, our city attorneys, oftentimes they're paid their salaries even more than of our city clerks or our administrators. And even though they work under the administrator, at least in my counties or my district. So.
Yeah, my experience is that in many cases, the consulting engineers in particular who are working for our public works people are earning a lot more than our public works directors. Any other questions, members? Representative Hertaus, I think you are next, and then Representative Kosnick.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the Carlson twins that are here today, and Mr. Sullum. So thank you for coming in and visiting with me the other day, and I understand those issues. I guess I will ask in the committee some of the same questions that I asked of you earlier this week. And, you know, essentially with regard to this salary cap, how do you, some of the communities have said to me they received qualified applicants, but we weren't able to hire the applicant we wanted. Can you address that issue? Is it, are your communities unable to find applicants who are qualified to perform the job or the task, or is it that they want the flexibility of hiring the one with the most experience at the highest cost?
Gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hertas, yes, that is an outcome that occurs from time to time. Has the city of Lakeville testified at the last hearing? They're competing with both other cities of their size within Minnesota, but also cities in adjacent states. And as they indicated, because of the cap, they believe they are faced with the proposition that they'll have to hire a consultant to basically go through a recruitment that they wouldn't believe is necessary absent the cap. As they pointed out, some cities have received exceptions for their city managers. They can't pay at that same level because the exceptions are granted on a city-by-city, county-by-county basis. And so not only are they not necessarily competitive with an adjacent state such as Iowa, they're not competitive with an Edina, for example, because they received an exception. Lakeville does not currently have an exception.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how would any of you respond then to the concern that removing the caps kind of creates a cascading effect of administrators, you know, competing amongst different cities for the highest wages and to maybe have public works directors or other people in the hierarchy of small local governments feeling that they're worth more because the city administrator is being paid more? How would you respond to that?
Gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, in my opinion, the effect is just the opposite. Right now, the pool of individuals that the cities and counties can look to is limited by the cap. I can provide you with several instances where former county managers have left for other states or positions in the nonprofit sector that pay better. Once those individuals were no longer faced with the effect of the cap on restraining their earnings ability, they're more likely to stay in their positions and has a consequently not create the vacancy that creates this cascading effect that you've indicated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And two committee members, I knew all these answers. I just wanted to, these gentlemen have shared those answers with me already. I just wanted them to be able to bring that into the committee as a matter of the record. The last point I would like to make, and members, the types of salaries we're talking about puts these individuals in the top 1% of income earners in the state. And my rhetorical comment would be with regard to competing for out-state talent and outsourced talent, one of the handicaps that our local governments face is having to compete with the very high fourth-tier income tax that we've imposed on this group of people. That requires our local governments to pay yet even higher wages to offset the increased cost of moving to Minnesota in this circumstance. So if we're looking for best talent, it's not just cities, but top talent from all around the nation for our businesses that need to recruit those type of people are having to offer even more to offset the cost of moving to Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Kosnick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, Representative Mason or Chair Mason, for bringing the bill back. So I got a couple questions. But first off, to the bill, if the testifiers or the author, how is this going to affect our outstate greater Minnesota cities and areas? Because I think the salary cap's probably more of an issue in the urban, suburban communities and the the core cities in Rochester's, Mankato, St. Cloud's, Duluth's probably, but is this going to escalate cost to our greater Minnesota cities?
Mr. Chair, I'll take a stab at that one to start. Representative Kosnick, the city of Rochester really pushed this issue with us this last year. I know they're a bigger city. They're a first-class city in greater Minnesota. The number of waiver requests grew dramatically this last year, with 41 positions being requested for waivers from the Department of Management and Budget. And we believe that over time, the current structure of the cap is not keeping up with the market, and we expect that more cities throughout the state, perhaps the St. Clouds and the Mankatos, and I think Duluth has had a waiver request in as well, but over time, the cap is not keeping up with the market, and I think you'll see more and more of those waiver requests impacting more and more communities across the state. So it was alarming to us when we saw those 41 requests come in this year, thinking that we're asking the Department of Management and Budget, and I'm not here to disparage them, but they're the ones that make the recommendation on what we should be paying these individuals at the local level. And not to, again, disparage them, but that's a tough decision for them to try to come up with those salary recommendations. We think it should be left to the local officials, and we would like to get rid of this law now. We are the only state in the nation that has a law like this that covers local units of government salaries, and we would like to get rid of it now before it becomes even more problematic than it already is.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then maybe more of a procedural question with this committee. I appreciate all the testifiers coming back, but you know, 2 weeks ago we took this file up as an informational hearing. Now we're having it all pretty much the same discussion all over again. We have a hearing later today, or after this one, that's informational again. And so I'm just kind of confused of why we're how we're organizing the committee and the you know, maybe if you could explain to the minority what, you know, why we're doing this. I know we've got the chair of the other committees here. You know, there's a variety of other bills that haven't come to this committee, so we're kind of like wasting our time here. And, you know, celebrated that the first bill got passed by the governor yesterday, but it's one of the latest points in session that a first bill's been passed. So we're kind of spinning our wheels here a little bit. We're coming up against a deadline, and we've got hearings out on the road. We had a hearing late last night, got another hearing in transportation down in Mankato, and we're being cut off on when we have debate to, you know, have to shorten it up and stuff in different committees. But so if you could just kind of give us some direction on why we're hearing this bill again, and why don't we just wait, or why did we have to do an informational hearing in the first place, and maybe to the second bill later, just kind of lay the groundwork and
sure.
And so we can have some understanding.
So, would Chair Mason or Chair Freiberg like to address that?
The reason I originally did House File 703 as informational is because it is a topic we hadn't really discussed in a long time, and at that point there was no Senate bill as well. There is now a Senate bill. So my intention today was just basically to take a vote, and we've already had the major testimony.
Chair Freiberg?
And I will let Representative Elkins answer why we're doing the informational on the plastic bag.
To be honest, Madam Chair, I didn't know that the plastic bag one was going to be informational. So.
Okay, and then that one.
Chair Freiberg.
Yeah, just to speak to the process a little more generally, first of all, I would dispute the characterization that this is spinning our wheels. As Chair Mason mentioned, you know, this hasn't been discussed in a long time. I don't think having additional discussion about something is a bad thing. Having an informational hearing first enables there to be more robust discussion. Just generally speaking on the referral process, we're in a little bit of a different situation. With both the Elections Committee and the Local Government Subcommittee in GovOps, they're not really like divisions within the Ways and Means Committee where they have regular standing times to meet like two or three times a week. So it's been my intention to work closely with the chairs of both committees, find the legislation and the topics that are most relevant to those committees and that they have the greatest desire to work on, and then refer those topics, refer the bills on those topics to the chairs with in close consultation with them. So it's, you know, I'm not referring every bill that has to do with local government in some capacity to the local government subcommittee, and I'm not referring every bill that has something to do with elections in some capacity to the elections subcommittee. They all need to go in and out through government operations anyway, but you know, this is an issue that I know that Chair Mason is particularly interested in. She's hearing the bill. So I think having had some discussion first in an informational setting and then potentially taking action subsequently seems like not a bad way to proceed to me.
Representative Costner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Freiberg, I appreciate that. And I think more discussion on bills is always welcome and should be. That's the democratic process. It seems like on some bills we have multiple discussions. Mm-hmm. Other bills we've had 3 minutes to discuss. In some of the committees that I've been in, that the hands-free bill and the transportation, finally the discussion time came up with 3 minutes left in committee hearing. You can go back and look at the record on that one. We had a bill in jobs where there was a bill on the $2.5 million lending for furloughed federal employees. But so just so it's, if I heard you correctly, Chair Freiberg, so some bills dealing with local government are not going to the local government subcommittee, is that correct? And then, like you mentioned, similar to the elections bill. And so makes me kind of wonder what's the point of these subcommittees then, I guess. You know, why aren't they in our jurisdiction?
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you. Well, as I mentioned, these committees don't have regular meeting times. That they're the way it's worked out, they're meeting once every
2 weeks.
2 weeks. So lots of bills touch on this in some capacity. So I do think it's very valuable to have it. However, we have many members on this committee, both on both sides, with local government experience. So there are issues, I think, where we can use the expertise both of the DFL and the GOP and really get to some solid pieces of legislation through the committee process. I can't speak to the other committees you mentioned. I would encourage you to put in a request to your leader to maybe switch off one of your other committees and come to the Government Operations Committee. We have very robust discussion in that committee. I don't know what's going on in your other committees, I don't believe we've heard a bill in 3 minutes in that committee.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the chair's comments. I just want, you know, the minorities here are ready to listen to bills and use our time and be deliberative about it. Your elections, we have a standing meeting time and we're willing to meet more if necessary. So we do have a standing meeting time to hear bills that work on local government issues, and that's what I think our charge is. In fact, on the local on the elections committee. I think they're scheduled to meet a similar amount of times as this committee, but I think they're meeting 3 times this week, aren't they? And so my point being is that for the public to have transparency, as we stated at the onset, we can't follow where those bills are coming and going, and if there's informational hearings or not. We had an informational hearing, now we're taking a vote, and people from my district, our city, is not here to speak on it on the day that we have a vote. I just don't think that's good governments and good transparency. So it's great that we have these testifiers here, but there's the public is trying to pay attention and participate in the process, and they should. It kind of this three card Monty of where the bills are going. Mm-hmm. It makes it difficult for the public to follow.
If there are no other questions, Madam Chair, would you like to repeat your motion?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 703 to government operations, and I think we have enough evidence to prove that the current legislation is a substantial hindrance to local governments hiring the people that they would like to hire. So I'd ask your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And members, the motion on the floor is to pass this bill back to refer it back to government operations. So all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay.
Thank you, members.
Okay.
Representative Elkins, if you'd like to proceed, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 511.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
A question on the motion. So are we were told that this is an informational hearing. He's moving the bill. Are we just introducing the bill, or is this an actual informational hearing? Because what was told to the public that this is an informational hearing. So what are we doing here with this bill?
Let's hear the testimony. I'm trying to get some information and see if we have how much latitude we have.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to hear the bill and have an informational hearing. I just think the motion should be set the record straight.
Okay. I'm sorry. Would you repeat what? I'm sorry. I must have missed.
Well, I'm a little unclear, to be honest, as well. So am I moving this strictly, or am I moving it at all?
This bill will be laid over.
Will be laid over. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. The purpose of this bill is to repeal a previous ban. Hold on. Wait a second.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We're okay?
Proceed.
Okay. Repeal a recently enacted ban on cities adopting bans on the sale of plastic bags within their jurisdictions. I have with me Mayor Brad Wearsome from the city of Minnetonka, who is going to testify with me this afternoon. Justice Brandeis once said that the states are the laboratories of democracies for the nation, and I would submit that cities are the laboratories of democracy for the states, including this one. And in my 20-plus years in public service, I would have to say that to this date, at least, the thing that I'm most proud of is playing a significant role in the enactment of the workplace smoking ban. Those many, many years ago, which began as a local initiative at the state and county level. And then once a critical mass of cities and counties had adopted those smoking bans locally, they gained enough support for this to become a statewide law, as well with the passage of the Indoor Clean Air Act. And I would submit that we have the same kind of dynamic going on here. So I'm going to show a two-minute video. This is very short. This is a PBS segment on what the underlying problem is.
You're not supposed to recycle plastic bags at home. But why? The bags are made of recyclable materials, but recycling companies don't want them in your blue bin. Seems strange, right? It's due in part to single-stream recycling, which is common in many communities. It works like this. You toss everything into one bin, and it all gets sorted at the recycling center. Special gears separate flat items, like paper and cardboard, from bottles and other containers. Air jets split lightweight bottles and cans away from glass. Electrically charged aluminum cans are repelled into their own stream, while magnets pull out tin cans and other metals. And after a beam of infrared light detects up to 7 types of plastic, a blast of air sends them along individual paths. The end result is huge bales of sorted materials, which are sold to paper mills, metal foundries, and plastic makers. So, what's the problem with plastic bags? The first complication occurs at step 1, the single-stream recycling bin. Here, bags get wet and dirty and become too contaminated to sell. Second, there's no mechanical process for separating plastic bags at recycling facilities. And a recycling industry representative said there's not enough staff or money to clean and dry the dirty bags. Instead, they either get tangled up in sorting equipment or accidentally end up in bales of separated paper. And if just 0.5% of a bale is contaminated by other materials, it can't be sold to reuse companies. In the end, most plastic bags are removed by hand and dropped in the trash, even if recyclables are inside. So, what can you do? Clean and dry plastic bags are still recyclable, but they must be dropped off at specially designated collection spots, like the ones you see at grocery stores. From there, companies buy the bags and recycle them into hard, durable plastics, like patio furniture. If you must choose between a home recycling bin or the trash, the recycling industry suggests throwing plastic bags in the trash. It might feel wrong, but recycling centers say it helps more materials get recycled. Another option, don't use plastic bags. Opt for paper or cloth bags instead.
So that's the basic problem that we're trying to solve, and I know that we'll have testimony today from those who will say that if we're going to do this, we should do this at a statewide level, but as a practical matter...
Now to our series on the plastic...
As a practical matter, what you can recycle does vary by community anyway. If you would, in order to know, you know, which of the little numbers on the plastic containers are recyclable, you would have to look up to your city or county website to see what the recyclers serving that city or county are actually accepting. So I think it's a reasonable start for this to allow cities to use local discretion to see how this works. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mayor Worsam for his comments.
Mayor, if you will identify yourself.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Brad Wearsom, and I am Mayor of Minnetonka. And so thank you very much to you and to the members of the committee for the opportunity to be here. I am also Second Vice President of the League of Minnesota Cities, and it is actually in that capacity that I am speaking to you today to testify in support of House File 511. I thank Representative Elkins for authoring the bill and for the many co-authors signing on. And thank you again to the committee for hearing it today. This bill is brief and to the point, and so I will be too. Locally elected city officials are, like you, beholden to our constituents. We make decisions every day to improve the health, safety, and well-being of our residents. When the state enacts laws such as the ban on political subdivisions from banning bags, we are robbed of our ability to respond to our constituents. I can confidently tell you that many of our over 800 member cities have no interest in regulating bags. I can also confidently tell you that all of our members support the ability of any city to consider doing so. We have seen a dramatic increase in legislation, both here in Minnesota and nationally, that threatens local control and erodes local decision-making authority. We ask you to work with us to strengthen the state-local relationship so that we as elected officials can better respond to the needs of Minnesotans. I understand today's hearing is informational, and on behalf of our members, I hope you take action on this bill in the near future and repeal the ban on cities regulating bags. When we discuss local control at the League of Minnesota Cities, I like to have kind of a short, easy-to-remember thing, and we say, when in doubt, local control. So I thank you very much for hearing me out today, and thank you for consideration of House File 511, and I'll take any questions that you may have.
Representative.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe for Representative Elkins or the testifier, I know that the... the prohibition against local governments from adopting such a ban for papers. Does this repeal also the ban on local governments from taxing or putting a fee on the use of such bags?
Madam Chair, this repeals the the existing statute related to allowing cities to ban the sale of plastic bags, but I don't know. I don't think that that was included in the statute that was that would be repealed here.
Okay, can we have staff look up on that too? Because I think the bill last year included a ban on an imposition of a fee or a tax on merchant-provided bags.
Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair, Representative, the statute that was finally enacted did not have the fee provision. That was in the bill that was introduced, but I think it was amended, so it wasn't part of the bill enacted.
Do you want to move on to the next testifier?
We can
testifier?
Move on to, I know there's a list of testifiers. I think we can move on, but you want to...
Are there any, I'm sorry, are there any other questions from members?
Thank you.
Thank you. And the next testifier that we have is Stephen Husser from Metro Cities. And then on deck would be Jamie Fole. Please proceed and identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Stephen Huser, and I represent Metro Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on House File 511. Metro Cities supports House File 511. I would like to thank Representative Elkins for carrying it. Metro Cities policy supports local control and decision-making authority that allows municipalities to decide their own local ordinances. Metro Cities opposes the removal of local authority related to merchant bags and supports restoring this authority. Thank you for the opportunity to express our support for House File 511, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Are there any questions of the members? Okay, thank you very much. Next is Jamie Pool. Do I have that right?
Pool, like swimming pool.
Okay.
Thank you, please. Chair Mason, members of the committee. Good morning. I'm Jamie Poole. As you can hear, I've got a little bit of this crud that's going around, so I apologize. I will make my remarks brief. I'm the president of the Minnesota Grocers Association, and again, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. We are the state trade association representing the retail food industry of Minnesota. We are one of the oldest trade associations in the state, and we are celebrating over 120 years of representing consumers, careers, and communities. We have over 300 members with nearly 1,200 locations statewide. Our members include grocers, convenience stores, wholesalers, manufacturers, and distributors, and manufacturers. Our member companies employ union and non-union Minnesotans, and we apply provide one out of every 20 jobs. The MGA and its membership are incredibly proud to be a part of the communities we serve. Social and environmental responsibility is a priority for our members. The Minnesota food industry is a leader in voluntary recycling and is dedicated to aggressive waste reduction. We continually review our products to ensure they are the most environmentally friendly available, and most of our bags are 100% recyclable or 100% reusable. For over a decade, we have voluntarily encouraged our shoppers to reduce, reuse, and recycle by offering plastic recycling at our locations. A convenient drop stop, millions of pounds of plastic are recycled annually. These recycled products are not just bags at our stores. They are plastic products and bags used within the home. And I have just a little sample to show you. This is typically what we find at our stores. And they consist of dry cleaner bags as well as bags that are used for ice, anything, a newspaper bag, a magazine bag. So not only are we recycling the products that you get, the bag that you might get at our store, but we're recycling all products within the store as well. This is an excellent community service, and we're proud to do it, but we do it voluntarily. And curbside is not an option for these, so we are the way to recycle everything. We have also partnered for years with the Pollution Control Agency to bring additional opportunities to educate consumers on how to properly pack bags and to promote a reusable bag so that you can use this as an option. Local restrictions have a potential to interfere with the many outstanding voluntary programs underway. They have a minuscule impact on litter and reducing waste and create a multitude of unintended consequences. Providing our customer choice is a top priority. Operating in an environment of violating local laws will cause customer confusion, add cost to business compliance, which all is unproductive and increase costs for everyone. City-by-city policy approaches create a direct market disadvantage to business localities that we are striving to promote. As an incredibly mobile society, customers will make the choice that fits their needs. We want to be very clear that our number one concern as industry is the effect the patchwork ordinances have on our customers. The food retail industry prides itself on its ability to ensure that our customers have all the conveniences and choices they need and deserve in their shopping experience. In a time when we're competing with the internet and with places that we can't see, supporting brick and mortar and making sure that we can do this is critically important. Execution at checkout has many complicated layers, an additional cost of implementing and executing, shorter checkout experience. These all can happen if we continue a city-by-city proposal. Proposals such as this, I believe, and our industry believes, move us in the opposite direction, even with progressive results. For these reasons, and with all due respect to Representative Elkins, we do oppose House File 511. Thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Madam Chair, I just want to say that each of you has a magical power that you did not have. If your local grocery store does not have a clearly visible recycling bin in it, all you have to do is mention that fact to the testifier or one of her representatives, and one will magically appear within 24 hours.
Thank you. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have heard from some of the food retailers, particularly grocery stores, not restaurant as such, but is there not a health risk or a safety issue that is concerned with being able to have a sanitary plastic bag to place meat and certain produce products in? I know there was a push some years ago to have consumers bring their reusable bag to bag their groceries, and I guess there was some real concern about the health risks of going that route. So do you have any comments on the use of plastic bags and the dispensing of meats and different things? I know I don't like what comes out of these packages oozing all over my car, so I certainly appreciate being able to put the meat and stuff in plastic bags.
Ms. Poole.
Madam Chair, Representative, certainly there's a necessity for plastic bags within a store that's undeniable. When you do have meat that does need to go into a plastic bag, you have the nuts in the areas. You've got to have bags to put those in. There has been concern that reusable bags can harbor bacteria because people sometimes multi-purpose them. They don't think about maybe putting their gym shoes in the bag and then their groceries. So we do have recommendations that we provide to customers. If they're going to use reusable, they do need to wash them and be careful with them. And if they are putting meats in there, you still need to have those in a plastic bag to protect the other products. Many times when you go through checkout, they will want to disseminate the meat products from your hot prepared foods, from your frozen foods as well. So that is a legitimate concern. And I think that gets back to our choice component, that everyone has to make the choice as to how they want to manage their groceries. And it's very difficult for us to dictate that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the author. Is there a Senate companion bill to this?
Senator Torres-Ray has agreed to carry this bill in the Senate. I don't know if she's dropped it yet.
All right, thank you. Madam Chair, well, I am a fan of plastic bags. As a matter of fact, I carry around plastic bags, and in my plastic bags, there's more plastic bags. Coburn's grocery stores, Target bags, all kinds of bags. And they're just a great tool to use, especially when your wife sends you to Target with a list that's longer than the Ten Commandments or the Constitution. And you can grab three or four or six or eight bags all at one time from Target or Coburn's or anywhere else, Cub Foods that have plastic bags, and carry them easily and transport them to your car and then back from your car to your garage to your kitchen. And very convenient. And it's a great tool. I'm glad that mankind thought of such a great tool to use, because paper bags sometimes rip. They get too heavy, and you can't grab three or four or five or eight of them sometimes. I have a record of 15 plastic bags filled with Target and or Coburn's, because I use Coburn's a lot. It's a record. Impressive. My kids are impressed by that. But the reason this bill is in front of us now is because Governor Dayton, in his wisdom, signed our bill a couple of years ago because the city of, what is it, Minneapolis or St. Paul wanted to ban plastic bags. And although as a former mayor I believe in local control, it should be left up to the cities and the administrators and the local citizens, the cities are just an extension of the state. They're under the statute of the state and under the authority of the state. So sometimes when some cities and some city leaders get some silly ideas to ban a plastic bag, the state has to step in and, unfortunately, bring them back to control, rein them in on their banning of freedom and liberty when it comes to plastic bags. So, and with that video, Representative Elkins, I'm glad you had the video, the two-minute video of recycling. We are a society of recycling. So for cities, and Minneapolis, if you want to ban bags, that's fine. I don't live in your city. I'll do my shopping somewhere else then, because I do have to drive back to Delano, and I usually stop at Lexington Target, you know, or but I'll go to Minnetonka. Well, the mayor wanted to ban them too, but I don't think so. But the point is that we're a recycling community. We recycle bags. Coburn's has the two big bins, and I collect these all the time, and I throw them in the bin each week. Sometimes I'll put them in my car, and they'll sit there for a week or 3 weeks or 4 weeks because I forget to stop. And it's annoying because I want to just throw them in the garbage, but I don't because I'm a good conservationist. Not to mention the great products that are used from plastic bags, Trex decks. Anybody know what Trex decks is? A great deck that you can put on your house, prevent your wood from rotting. It's a good solid product. The picture that you had on there was a table or a chair. So we are a people that recycle, and we don't need cities telling us that we can't use bags because we're not responsible enough to recycle them. And it's just a matter of education. We must educate, and the schools do a good job. There's some students here now. I bet from kindergarten, you students have been taught to recycle, right? Some are shaking your head. Yes. So we do recycle. So for cities to assume that we can't use a plastic bag, we're not smart enough or have the wherewithal to recycle them and be good stewards of our environment is insulting. And that's for the state had to come in and pass a law to ban that, from banning the bag. And not to mention the patchwork of different municipalities passing their own little laws. It's too cumbersome and hard on businesses and residents. And so for that reason, I do not support your bill, Representative Elkins.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Elkins, maybe you could share with us, why did we pass this bill last year? Why did it pass? And then ultimately, Governor Dayton even signed it into law. So what was the logic to begin with?
Madam Chair, I wasn't here last year, but I suspect that Representative McDonald did a good job of articulating.
They're noisy. Other than that, I have one critique. They're noisy, but besides that.
Well, Madam Chair, if I can follow up, I'm sure some of our other testifiers will, you know, I want to have time for that. But essentially, you know, some uniform standards are good for business practices so that businesses can operate throughout the state and have the least amount of bureaucracy and regulation and do what they do best as and serves their customers. I like to go to Costco, so my back of my car is filled with the cardboard boxes that I get, and I use those to unload and load. And so we are a recycling community, and the control is best between the customer and the business that's providing the service. And it's best for business also to be able to operate throughout the state with certain confidence without having to check a manual for 837 cities or whatever it is. To make sure that they're in compliance of Big Brother government. So that's why I think it got passed last year, and I think even Governor Dayton recognized it. And so I'm glad this is an informational hearing. It's an interesting topic, of course, but I think it's a, you know, I appreciate your bill and the information, but I think we passed it for a reason. We want Minnesota to succeed. We want our retailers to succeed. And so I would stand in opposition to this bill. But it's just an informational hearing, so we'll lay it over and move on. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kosnick, I'm glad to hear you like the approach we're following in this committee of being deliberative and using the informational hearing as a tool to fully flesh out these issues. And also, I mean, to your point, though, the I looked up the bill. It was Governor Dayton was not supportive of it. It did end up, as tended to happen in the last session, being packaged into a 143-page omnibus bill. So I just looked it up here to get the page length of that one. That was the budget year, so there were. It was included with the bill that funded several state agencies, which I know Governor Dayton was always very concerned about our state employees. So, but as tended to happen during the previous session, there were various policy provisions unrelated to funding that were included in there. And I think were he here, he might argue that he felt somewhat obligated to sign that and was not supportive of every policy provision in there, particularly this one, because I remember this bill was traveling independently prior to that. And I believe there was a statement that he was not supportive as, when it was traveling as an individual bill. There was some talk about how great plastic bags are. I kind of dispute that. But the great thing about this bill is that it doesn't actually ban them. It just takes away the preemption provision that we did put in place in the last session. Local governments are able to decide what works best for their communities. Under it, this provision was not in place up until 2 years ago, and I don't believe the world ended and the grocery stores went out of business because local governments had that authority. I remember when the bill was discussed in the Government Operations Committee in the last session, we heard a lot of testimony from Minneapolis. I don't live there either. But they went through a very deliberative process and just to decide what worked best for their communities. And every community might have a different need. If you're up in northeastern Minnesota next to the boundary waters or a sensitive environmental area, the local government might want to pass something to restrict that. It's not, you know, I could see this not just being an issue like in the metro area. We, as Representative McDonald said, we do recycle, but a lot of these do end up in the environment. We see them in our lakes, we see them in our trees, we see them in our streams. So, you know, I applaud Representative Elkins for bringing this forward. I did hear that the Senate Companion was introduced last week, just so you know that, so it is out there as well. So I think this is a good bill myself.
Madam Chair, my name was raised, so maybe if I could have a quick reply.
I beg your pardon?
My name was raised, so if I could just have a quick reply.
Oh, Representative Costner.
I appreciate the comments, and, you know, my understanding is the main charge of our legislature right now is to pass a budget. It's a budget year. I didn't see a fiscal cut. Is this a budget bill or a policy bill? I think it's a rhetorical question.
Yes.
It's a policy bill, and so I think the point stands on its own, so we'll let it there. Thank you.
Representative Elkins, did you want to say anything?
No.
Representative Ryder?
No.
Okay.
Now I'll refrain from a cheap shot.
No. I can handle it.
Okay. Representative Hertas.
Thank you. Thank you again, Madam Chair. And during the course of this discussion reminded me of one of the circumstance that I encountered with regard to plastic bags. And whatever may come of this legislation, if at all, it's important that local governments, if they're granted this authority, that they be sensitive to the needs of business. These bags are oftentimes printed in very large quantities, and it takes a while to use up that inventory and at considerable cost. And as a good example, many decades ago, I purchased a company in downtown Minneapolis that was present where the Today Target Center is. And when I purchased this company from the bankruptcy court, eight stories of a full city block, I encountered a room in that building that was about a third the size of this committee room, and it was filled with more than 2 million plastic bags in cases with printed company name on it that had no more use, and I was beside myself what I was going to do with all of this product. And lo and behold, this was really before recycling was popular, I found that there was a company that would recycle all these bags. And although I was paid a fraction of what those bags were worth, nonetheless, it was the responsible thing to do with them. And they were shredded and melted and re-extruded into other plastic products. And that was even before Trex, which, by the way, does not protect wood from rotting. It replaces wood entirely. So anyway, that being the case, Minnesota has, I think, is the leader in the nation with regard to our recycling rate. And the big growth, also as a past mayor, we couldn't get our community to recycle very effectively until we did the single sort program where you just put it all in there. And we saw that video where they sorted out. And that caused a great deal of recycling compliance. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Our next testifier is Bruce Newstead. After him is Lance Clapp. Please proceed and identify yourself first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Members of the committee, my name is Bruce Newstead. I work for the members of the Minnesota Retailers Association. We're a trade group of about 1,200 storefronts across the state. Our members range from one family-owned store companies up to national retailers and everything in between. It's important to note that many of our members work in collaboration with their customers and their employees on in-store recycling programs, including bags. This industry, as you've heard, has voluntarily and at its own expense made tremendous strides in recycling over the years. It's my pleasure to share perspectives on House File 511. I'm sure you've noticed that near the end of most transactions in a store, a clerk asks a consumer a question, and it's become somewhat routine, and that is, would you like a bag? Behind that question is years of work of retailers and suppliers in the area of sustainability and recycling. However, equally as important to the question is the answer from the consumer. Consumers today answer that question based on the product they're selecting and how they might make use of that bag following purchase. This consumer choice is important and completes a transaction where both the retailer and the consumer has made an informed decision. I'm fortunate to work with retailers of all sizes, and specific to the topic of local bag regulation, I found that retailers are concerned about doing business in a city with a bag ban or a fee or other type of regulation, but then having a competitor down the street without that same type of regulation. And retailers in borders communities share that concern when competing with another retailer directly across the state line. In these cases, the consumer doesn't appreciate having certain options at checkout in one store versus another store, especially when bag taxes or fees are involved. In these scenarios, there's a potential to encourage that consumer to shift their shopping habits, as you've heard. I suspect you're thinking that this wouldn't happen over a dime for a bag or a lack of bag option, but the reality today is that consumers are smart about their options, competitive with their choices, they're price sensitive, and they will change their shopping habits. This effect stands to be more pronounced again in border communities, where there may already be cost pressures of a Minnesota retailer versus that of across the border. For retailers that operate in multiple communities, there is also an economy of scale in purchasing and consistency of operation. As an example, an owner of three stores, each in a different community, is able to bulk purchase bags and then incorporate them into her or his operating model consistently in each community. This provides important consistency that their customers expect and helps with the shopper experience and the store's operating model. Finally, Madam Chair, back directly to consumer choice, it's important to note that different bags, as we've talked about, have different uses, both at the point of sale and following the bag's first use. Oftentimes, those decisions are made by the consumer based on safety, cleanliness, preference, performance, and follow-up use, including whether or not you have a dog. The retailer appreciates customers having those options across communities and in a consistent manner. And as I've mentioned, today's consumers are smart shoppers, and relative to bags, retailers are doing the right thing when it comes to looking at options at checkout and investments in recycling. Let me end by saying we share the goal of reducing, reusing, and recycling point-of-sale bags. And for that reason, and those that I have mentioned, a city-by-city approach to bag regulation simply removes choices for consumers. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you, Mr. Elkin, for bringing this issue forward.
Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Next, Lance Clatt. After him will be Tony Quilas. Good morning, and if you would just identify yourself first.
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lance Clatt, Executive Director of the Minnesota Service Station and Convenience Store Association. My organization represents over 400 members in this great state of Minnesota. I am here today to testify in opposition of House File 511 for a couple of reasons. In the petroleum convenience store industry, our locations offer many neighborhood goods and services to their customers, your constituents. My retail locations are not grocery stores. many of the people frequently visiting our locations only buy 3 to 5 items, but just enough to need a bag. I can't imagine placing only a few items in a large bulky or medium bulky size paper bag. That would be a waste. Besides, our stores locations have small footprints and a lack of storage for paper bags, as also this will increase our store's cost of doing business. As we all know, that'll be passed on to the consumer. Our store owners are second and third generation owner operators supporting their local communities. Many of our member locations are invested and already offer voluntary recycling solutions at their sites. We can try and work together coming up with a sustaining solution that can help and work for everyone. Thank you for your time and available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
No, I got a question for this testifier. Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Freiberg's point, this doesn't ban paper bags, obviously, but in lieu of recent history, this is why. Question for the testifier, though. Let's just say, for example, that a city, I won't mention which city, decided to ban plastic bags, and it'd be up to the impetus would be on the customer. But how does that look like at an SA or Speedway or Quick or Holiday? If they come in for 3 or 4 or 5 items and there's no bag to put it in, how does your employees handle that?
Madam Chair, Representative, we haven't come across that, but obviously when you have 3 bottles of Mountain Dew and a bag of chips, I don't know how they're going to handle that. I don't think they can handle that. It just doesn't justify, and also lack of people coming into our sites may not buy as many products anymore to patronize our locations because there's no way to get those products out to their vehicles or to take them home to consume them. So at this moment, we don't know how they do that. I don't think they would be able to do that because I can't handle 5 things in my hands. And when you're going to a convenience store, either you're traveling or people are coming through, you don't plan on bringing a plastic bag to a convenience store to handle the offerings you're picking up. It's a lot of it's instant choice. It's not a planned purchase or a consumption. So it's pretty difficult for our consumers in our industry to be able to pick up a handful of items without a bag. Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
No, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Elkins.
When I was a freshman in college, I worked part-time as a bag boy and then as a checker in a Lucky's grocery store in Oakland, California. And that was back before these things were invented. And we had 3 different sizes of paper bags, depending on how much stuff you had and depending on the quantity of goods. There were small bags, medium bags, and large bags. I rather suspect that the market for smaller bags paper bags would probably reappear.
Thank you very much for coming to testify. Next, I have Tony Aquila. And after him, Deb McMillan.
Morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tony Quillis, and I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I will be brief because a lot of the comments I wanted to make have been made here today already. But I just wanted to highlight a couple of programs that are out there right now. And as Representative Hertaus had mentioned, Minnesota probably leads the nation in recycling rates now. Any way you kind of look at it, whether it's for plastics, aluminum, or glass, we're very good about that. We have a very good, robust, publicly and privately invested millions of dollars into our infrastructure as well as some of the programs that we have in the state of Minnesota. And we should be proud of that. But there's 2 programs that I just wanted you to make you aware of. And one of them was called It's in the Bag. And it was started by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and it's now over at the Recycling Association of Minnesota. But it was a program that allowed plastic bags and film recycling. You saw Ms. Poole showed some of the other types of bags, newspaper bags that Sunday papers come in, also dry cleaning bags. But it allowed those customers the opportunity to recycle unwanted plastic bags at participating retail locations. It was pretty successful. At least the last numbers I had from 2003 to 2009, 5.5 million pounds of plastic bags were recycled. And most of those went to Trex to make decks that we talked about. And I think you saw in Representative Elkins' video, the lawn chair that I wish I bet the two he and I were sitting in right now because it was on a beach with a little shore washing up to us as we sit here in Minnesota. But that was just one example of where some of these recycling bags go is into that decking. Madam Chair, and the other one I'd like to bring up is we have a program. We have two affiliates at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. One of them is called Energy Smart, where we go through and try and help people with their energy costs. But the other one is called WasteWise, where we go through and help cities and counties meet their sustainability and recycling goals. And we go through and do waste sorts. We help counties, like I said, meet their recycling goals. And it's a great way for us to take a voluntary approach to waste reduction. It saves us money to go through. It keeps things out of landfills. And it also allows us to educate businesses on the reduce, reuse, and recycle programs that are available either through the Pollution Control Agency or through other private entities, and allows us to get in there and help folks either with their end product or ways to save money, whether it's restaurants through organics and trying to lower their waste bills that way. So I just wanted to point those two programs out. It's in the bag, was very successful, and the team that we mentioned had gone through. And then we provide a voluntary service through Minnesota WasteWise, through businesses and help counties too. And one final point, Madam Chair, has been touched on a little bit. For our manufacturer and retail members, when you talk about whether it's bags or cups or other products, when it is the chain of commerce is, I'll call it upset, the patchwork, when if you manufacture paper bags or plastic bags and I can sell them in International Falls but I can't sell them in Winona, or I can manufacture them and use them in Duluth but I can't use them in Worthington or Winona, it just gets real confusing to our members and retail folks as they order and try and work through the chain of commerce. And I just wanted to make that point. Thank you for your time today, and would stand for any questions.
Thank you. There are no questions. Thank you very much for coming. Next, I have Deb McMillan.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Deb McMillan. I'm Vice President of Public Policy for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. Twin West represents more than 500 businesses who employ 55,000 employees in the western suburbs. We represent about a dozen different municipalities, which is a regional marketplace in the western suburbs. We oppose policies that create a city-by-city patchwork of regulation that creates confusion for consumers and inequities for businesses. Our member businesses are very consumer conscious and aware of competitive pressures, so it will come as no surprise that the business community has deep concerns that take away policies that take away consumer choice. Consumers are left confused and frustrated with policy differences from city to city. In addition to confusion and frustration, the increased costs of businesses to comply with mandates ultimately get passed on to consumers through higher prices, making it difficult to compete in a landscape where rules and fees could vary widely from city to city. House File 511 supports the creation of punitive policies that drive consumers across city borders or to online shopping solutions. I urge you to reject legislation that encourages patchwork regulation, and instead, let's keep local businesses growing and competitive right here in Minnesota. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Any questions? No questions. Thank you very much. Next, I have Kyle Samajima, and after him, Lynn Hoffman. Good morning. Please identify yourself.
Yes, I am Kyle Samajima, and I am the Executive Director of Minneapolis Climate Action. Thank you for letting us testify today. The issue with plastic bag pollution is serious and increasing in impact. Every day another news report, TV show, or film comes out about the overwhelming negative impact. We need to have a culture shift in our expectations as residents of a planet with finite resources. Our choices have impact. Letting cities maintain control of how they deal with plastic pollution and other issues allows responsive government and cities to make the right moral choice to address our pollution issues. There have been successful bans all over the world, and commerce did not come to a halt. Consumers have figured out how to go between Aldi and Target, knowing one provides bags and one does not. They do not seem to melt under that confusion. Businesses deal with varying legislation, regulations, and business conditions across the state and country all the time. I have every confidence that they can adjust to this regulation as well. The issue with bagging meat, just since someone brought that up, Representative McDonald, is not an issue with these bans because they don't, or maybe it was someone else, but they don't, these bans usually don't affect the bags inside a store, and people can always bring their own. In 20 years of using my own bags, I have never experienced an illness because I figured out that I can wash the bags that I use. Also, reusable bags are easy to carry. I can carry six at a time, and they carry more stuff because they're bigger. And most plastic bags do not get recycled, despite the efforts of grocery stores and other stores to provide recycling. It stands at about 5%. In fact, if you drive 94, down 94, you can see where most of them end up. And Mr. Representative McDonald, being a good conservationist, you will know that reduce comes before recycle. The answer when asked paper or plastic should be neither. I brought my own. We can't recycle our way out of this plastic bag problem. It's time that businesses did their fair share in addressing our growing and overwhelming plastic problem besides having the recycling bin in front of the store. As an executive director of Minneapolis Climate Action, I will point out that there is a connection between climate change and consumption, including the use of plastic bags. The EPA says that approximately 42% of greenhouse gas emissions are associated with the energy used to produce, process, transport, and dispose of the food we eat and the goods we use. This includes the extraction or harvest of materials and food, production and transport, provision of services, reuse, recycling, composting, and disposal. I urge the committee to let local government entities make their own decisions on protecting the environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Ms. Kyle was your first name.
Yes.
But I'm not going to pronounce your last name.
Samajima. It's easy.
Samajima.
Say it once.
Thank you. It's obvious that you're opposed to the plastic bag, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So do you own a dog?
I don't, but I do get a newspaper that comes in a plastic bag, and you can buy them. So there are many, many bread bags. Do you buy bread in a plastic bag? There are many alternatives to a grocery store plastic bag for your dog and your cat.
Representative.
Madam Chair. Well, yes, you are correct. We are a very creative and innovative people.
Yes, we are.
We can come up with great solutions.
Yes.
Plastic bag being one of them. But I usually don't carry a bread bag, and since my wife's on keto, we don't eat that much bread anymore. Bummer. So I don't have a bread bag when I'm taking Winston, our golden doodle, for a walk or run. And sometimes you cannot pick up that doo-doo with a newspaper, simply a pick.
But if you can put a plastic bag in your pocket, why can't you put a bread bag in your pocket?
Well, I stated that because my wife's on keto and we don't eat that much bread. So really, the plastic bag is the best form to pick up a dog's waste and not a newspaper. That's just would be silly. So just want to make that point. And then that's all I have for now.
Okay. There are alternatives, I promise you.
Okay. Representative Freiberg.
To this critical point, I do want to point out none of the ordinances that were under discussion would have banned the use of plastic doggy poop bags. It's only the bags that you take out of the store, I believe.
Yes, because it's clear that those should not.
So just to bring it back to the matter, to the specific legislative language in front of us here.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Lynn Hoffman. Welcome, and please identify yourself.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Lynn Hoffman. I'm the co-president and CEO of Eureka Recycling. We are a nonprofit recycler, social enterprise based in the Twin Cities. Our mission is to demonstrate that waste is completely preventable. As part of that mission, we run a facility that processes 400 tons of residential recycling every day. Looks a lot like the facility that you saw in the PBS video. And we are here to voice strong support for the repeal of the preemption of the plastic bag bans. The preemptive action by the state is harmful to the environment and human health, and it restricts our cities from fulfilling their legal responsibilities to protect their residents. Single-use bags pose significant problems to the environment, to wildlife, and human health through their production, use, disposal, and recycling. In an incinerator, burned plastic releases toxins and carcinogens from even the most modern facilities. This is an environmental justice issue, as incinerators are and landfills are consistently located in communities with the highest concentration of people of color and low-income families, which I feel like is an important point. I hope that you heard me say.
No, I didn't, sure.
Yeah, sure. When plastic bags are disposed of in incinerators or landfills, the number one indicator of where those facilities are located is the color of the community and the income of the community. So the toxicity issue of disposing of plastic is a huge environmental justice issue that I think as leaders of the state we need to address. In the environment, plastic actually never biodegrades. Instead, it slowly photodegrades. So it turns into microplastic, which is something I'm sure you've heard in the news recently. The microscopic bits of plastic are not captured by our water treatment plants. Scientists have found these bits of plastic attract up to 1 million times more toxins than is measured in the ambient water surrounding them. These toxins enter the food chain, and they where they accumulate progressively greater risk for wildlife and human health. Plastic bags are made from polyethylene, which is a suspected human carcinogen, and often have additional additives. These are much more serious health concerns than a washable canvas bag could present, in my opinion. The plastic problem is even worse in the Great Lakes than in the oceans. A team of scientists recently found the number of microplastic particles was 24% higher in the Great Lakes than in the Southern Atlantic Ocean. In fact, a study in 2018 found microplastic in 12 brands of beer that was made from the water in the Great Lakes. This team also collected 159 tap water samples from around the world and found that 81% of the samples from 14 countries were contaminated with microplastic. In a state where water is central to our economy, to our identity, to our quality of life, it's critical that we take action to protect it. Americans use 100 billion plastic bags annually, more than 330 bags per person per year. They're difficult to collect, to sort, and to transport, so while we are a people that recycles, less than 5% are currently recycled of that 100 billion bags annually. In part, this is because the film needs to be collected separately. It's extremely problematic in our facilities, as you saw, wraps around the axles at a high cost. We shut down our facility 2 hours a day. People have to climb in with box cutters to cut it out of the equipment. So it's not only a human health cost, but there's a business and community cost to it. So these plastic bags we get at the store today at no additional charge, which are used for roughly 12 minutes or less, are not free. We're paying for them in other ways. This may sound strange for a recycler to say, but for a lot of single-use plastics, including bags, recycling is just not the best solution. Reduction is the only strategy that will really help us achieve the things that we all want and need, like a more stable climate, improved human health and equity, and resilient local economies. Plastic bag bans are an effective strategy at reducing the number of bags in our environment and the negative impact they have on human health. No one is exactly sure the extent that these microplastics and plastics are having on human health, but it's one of the great unfortunate experiments that our generation is staging at the potential expense of our children and our grandchildren, who will ultimately suffer any unknown consequences. So our community should be able to take measures to protect our kids, and these preemption bills undermine our democratic process. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Kosner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And testifier, I apologize, I didn't catch your name.
It's Lynn Hoffman.
Ms. Hoffman, mm-hmm. You'd mentioned when you work or have a recycling plant. We have one in Lakeville as well.
Sure.
400 tons a day, you mentioned?
This 400 tons mentioned. A day. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Talking with, I think it's Minnesota Environmental is what they're called in Lakeville. It's part of Dick Sanitation. Mm-hmm. A lot of the recycling, what do you do with your recycling?
We sort it, and Madam Chair, we sort it and we sell it to end markets that make new products from it.
Representative Cousin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that's similar to the process that I'm familiar with. And if I understand right, maybe you could share with the committee your experience if it's similar. that a lot of the end market is in China, and they are purchasing less and less recycling. And so unless you have a different outlet for your recycling, recyclers are getting stuck holding a lot, you know, with a lot of recycling, then no place to put it, no market for it right now. It's kind of in a slump. Is that correct?
Ms. Hoffman.
Sure, Madam Chair. It is correct to certain degrees. We didn't rely on Chinese markets. There are plenty of domestic markets for materials as well. So the prices have been depressed, and there are recyclers mostly on the coasts that are having more challenge moving their material currently. That's correct.
Representative Klausner.
Well, thank you, and Ms. Hoffman, I appreciate that. That kind of confirms what I was thinking. And, you know, I think you bring up some important points of, you know, we're all global citizens and social stewardship, and maybe we need to rethink our recycling. And, you know, if we don't want it here and it pollutes our airs and stuff, why is it okay to do that to the Chinese necessarily or other markets? Kind of interesting thing to consider. Representative Freiberg had mentioned the point, and maybe a little bit in humor, but, you know, to the bill, the stores can give out free doggy bags. You know, could it be this size with this logo on it? So the bill doesn't really address that. It is, you know, an inventive storekeeper would say, here's all your free doggy bags and kitty bags. If what the consumer does with the bags, I think, is a little out of the retailer's point. They may actually end up recycling and reducing and reusing by putting their groceries in there first. And then the third point is, you know, a lot of large retail areas that, you know, would be curious to see, you know, areas, you know, with the Mall of America, with the number of stores that they have in there, how that would impact all the individual stores and employees within just that complex. Or Representative Mason, my family likes to shop at the Egan Outlets, and it would be interesting to see what a bag ban would do to those business models. So, or, you know, maybe border cities. You'd mentioned the Great Lakes, and that is a concern. I don't know how we control Canada from polluting our Great Lakes, but maybe it's another topic. But certainly cities on the border, like Moorhead and Representative Lean's district, might have a different take on why they would have to unfairly compete with their bordering businesses across the border. So a couple things to think about, but I appreciate your testimony and a lot to think about. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I wanted to respond to one point. And what I've read about why the Chinese don't want our recyclables anymore is that such a high percentage of what we were sending them is adulterated with plastic bags.
Madam Chair, may I respond to that as well? Thank you.
Ms. Huff.
I appreciate you bringing that up. I think it underscores the point that I'm making in that plastic bags, again, recycling is not the best solution for them because they are toxic to produce and to make and to recycle. So, and I agree that offshoring that problem to someone else isn't the right solution either. So really, when we look at it from what our goals really are and in terms of being leaders and protecting our human health, reduction is really the best strategy.
Representative McDonald.
Just quickly, Madam Chair, and I do agree, Ms. Hoffman, with your efforts. I represent Wright County and Delano. Randy Sanitation, or Randy's Environmental Services. Randy mm-hmm. and Sandy Raskoviak are good friends of mine and very active in our community, and they have a wonderful state-of-the-art recycling facility. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, they're looking at they are expanding already in Delano for perhaps an organic digester. So in doing so, and if this does proceed, 80% of what they collect will be less distributed to our landfills. So it's really a wonderful program. And you're right, we are a throwaway society. Our toaster went out the other day, out of four, only two work. And I said to my wife, well, before you order on Amazon or go to Target, let me see if I can fix it. So we should be a society more of fixing things mm-hmm. instead of throwing things out. But I just wanted to speak briefly just to commend you on the efforts. I get it. The efforts are admirable. And I needed to give a plug for Randy's Environmental Service out of Delano because we talked about so much recycling. I had to mention that.
Can we get to Representative Song?
Oh. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Elkin, for bringing this forward. I think The purpose of this bill goes back to one of the points one of the testifiers made earlier, that reduction comes before recycling. As a former city council member, you know, it's working with other cities around us, it was really hard to get people to recycle, especially lower income communities that are having challenges of their own. And so I think the intent of this is not to place an outright ban on plastic bags, but to move us in a direction where we can be more effective in controlling, plastic bags. So only 5% being recycled, I think that we can do better, but it will take time.
Yeah. Thank you. Representative Cossey.
Well, I know we're running out of time, but I was just going to say, I was kind of curious about this keto diet thing, and so if the toaster breaks, you go on a keto diet because Representative McDonald can't fix the toaster, I guess. But the representative makes a good point. If lower-income people have a harder time recycling, we're going to raise the cost of their goods and services that they purchase by not having them have an affordable method of having bags to take it out. So we're going to raise the cost of those products and keep them more poor. I don't get the logic in that, but I appreciate the informational hearing, and we'll finish the meeting probably now. But will this bill take the same course as the previous file, 703, informational hearing, and then if you decide to take action, we'll come back to this committee? Is that correct?
Exactly. This is an informational hearing because we are still trying to gather more information, but the possibility is we could bring it back. And if... just the indulgence, I know we have some people sitting in the audience. Is there anybody that wants to testify very quickly before we adjourn?
I would.
Okay, if you would come. Mm-hmm. Please come. No, please come down.
Madam Chair, while she's on their way, because we're running out of time, can I just ask, is this our last scheduled meeting now, or do we have another scheduled meeting since deadline is coming up?
We should have another meeting yet.
So then I see there are some bills that are on the general registrar that refer to local government. Will those come to us first, even though they've been scheduled?
I think they have to be the process would be referred to GovOps and then to us, as I understand it.
If they're on the I'd need to see what bills you mean. If they're on the general register, I don't know that they would need to.
Madam Chair, you're correct, Representative Freiberg. They wouldn't need to. But they are referring their House file. There's three of them, particular 0608, 0619, 0873, that particularly refer to local government. We didn't get a chance to see those bills, and that's a shame. So I know
you could bring. Okay,
we could bring that up on the House
floor. What was those 608, 873, and what was the third one?
Yeah, 608, 619, and 873. Just food for thought for local government.
Okay. Thank you. And I know we're running over, but I do want to give her time to testify. If you
sure.
please identify yourself.
My name is Erica Van. I want to thank you all for hearing my what I have to say today. I've just been listening and observing, but I couldn't stay silent. I just wanted to mention that this is not a revolutionary idea to take away plastic bags. In fact, whole countries are banning single-use plastic bags. My sister, who lives in Portugal, recently told me that her city within Portugal banned single-use plastic, and immediately she saw the effects on the beach, on the roadsides. I think, to arguments that low-income communities, then they have an additional burden. To someone else's point earlier, plastic bags didn't always exist. People need to eat. They need to buy food. They will find a solution. Whether that be a reusable plastic bag that's a one-time, or a reusable canvas bag that's a one-time cost that they can use for 20 years. There are solutions. Plastic bags did not always exist. So I don't foresee the economy collapsing because we take away single-use plastic bags. I'm very passionate about it. I'm still young. I have children of my own. We don't have time to sit and talk about it. We have to take action on the environment. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. There are no questions. Okay, Mark, if you would come. Okay, Mr. Hughes.
Okay, Chair Maslin, Rep. Elkin, members of the committee. I just heard that Eureka was mentioned as far as the recycling, and I just think the committee should know I'm going to the city of Shoreview pretty soon where I live, because we have started the recycle program through Eureka, and we've had some really severe weather this winter. You know that. But those are 10-ton trash trucks, and it's a nonprofit organization, and our trash isn't being picked up in a timely manner at all. And I just thought the whole committee should know. I mean, you're going to think I'm anti-everything, and I'm not. But when things aren't working, I'm going to tell you, this isn't working.
Thank you. Representative Elkins moves that his bill be laid over. And again, this is an informational meeting. We may take the topic up again. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you for your attention.